The House will come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
It's day 46 of the 105-day session here at the Washington State Capitol up on the hill in Olympia. A lot's happened since January 13th, with even more to come before the legislature adjourns on April 27th, 2 months from today. In the meantime, there'll be plenty of Capitol ideas to think about, and today's is one of the best. Introducing Representative Sean Scott from the beating heart of Seattle, District 43. In addition to being a first-year member of the House Democratic Caucus, Sean is an author, a filmmaker, an educator, a labor organizer, and a thinker. You'll meet him in just a minute, but first I'll say what I always say. This is the Capitol Ideas podcast, where members of the majority Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. We recorded these ideas on Wednesday, February 26th, 2025, and except for a few edits, this is exactly what we said. Representative Sean Scott, District 43, this is your first session and your first Capitol Ideas podcast, and I'm honored to have you sitting across from me today.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. I know that your day is pretty full, so we're going to try to cram a whole lot of stuff into about the next 20 minutes.
Excellent.
The first thing I want to start with is, how did you get here?
Well, public service has been something that I've been fascinated by and drawn towards ever since I was a kid. My dad, who raised me up, surrounded me with history, with biography. CNN was constantly on. And I had kind of a sense of these big global events that were taking place in the 90s growing up in Seattle as really kind of inseparable from my own life and my own decisions that I was making. And so the idea of being able to represent the people of my district, includes the University of Washington, where I went to school, has been just such an honor. And it's great to be able to be here to talk with you about it.
I really want to hear more about your past because I know enough about it to know that it's fascinating. However, we generally need to have some kind of legislative nexus to justify the existence of Capitol Ideas here. So we're going to sprinkle in some bills and some legislative talk. But I want people to know that you are, among many other things, a filmmaker, an author, a labor organizer, a person who seems to be very dedicated to the community. And that impresses me.
I appreciate that so much. I mean, I've tried to live a life that is meaningful. And I think it was Muhammad Ali who said something to the impact of a life is meaningful to the extent that it has an impact on others. One of the bills that I'm very excited to be working on this session, House Bill 1858, is a bill related to the document recording fee. It closes what amounts to a loophole that mostly very large financial institutions are able to make use of, and directs that money towards low-income housing, like the kind of housing I grew up in, both in Queens, where I was born, and in Seattle, where I've resided since May of 1992. It also directs a certain amount of that money and those funds towards the Covenant Homeownership Program. I studied history at the University of Washington once upon a time, delved into the very unfortunate history that we have had with residential and racial segregation, thinking that, you know, like so many research projects that undergrads embark in, this was going to go into a drawer somewhere. It would probably have very little impact except to the extent that it reaches other academics or other historians, not knowing that when that research was being done about 20 years ago through the Civil Rights and Labor History Project, it would really form the basis of the Covenant Home Ownership Act, which has been a form of redress of that residential segregation for Black and brown families in our state, helping them with down payment assistance, helping with other housing assistance. And I think there has been a through line that I have seen in this institution and work that I had done before ever getting here and what I'm able to work on here that gives me the sense that I'm exactly where I am supposed to be, and I'm glad that the voters of the 43rd Legislative District agree with that assessment as of now.
By about a 2-to-1 margin, right. I believe. I think a lot of people would be surprised that up in progressive Seattle, for far too long, redlining was the typical real estate aspect. And by locking entire generations of people out of home ownership, it kind of perpetuated the fact that the only kind of generational wealth that working people really can build is homeownership. And the Covenant Homeownership Act, which passed last session, is a great step in moving away from the sad legacy of all that redlining.
Right. I think, you know, some of the more unfortunate aspects of our past, as you mentioned, even here in progressive Washington, they've impacted us all negatively. You know, Quincy Jones, who passed away recently, I think about the fact that he went to a school that invested in the arts. He grew up in neighborhoods in the city of Seattle that maybe had more expansive ideas about what we could share with one another culturally, across cultural lines, that absolutely influenced who he was and what he went on to become. You think of how many, you know, luminaries have passed through our public school system, people like Lynn Shelton, Lindy West, Macklemore, right? Sir Mix-a-Lot. These are people that kind of had a way of making a particular viewpoint mainstream. And we're at our best, I think, when we do that, when somebody is speaking from their position as a woman in this society or as a Black person in this society, an LGBTQ person in this society, and articulates that in such a way where we all can see kind of the commonality and the vulnerability in it. I think that when we grow up in societies that are cloistered, segregated, and blocked off by class, by race, we just lose a really fundamental part of ourselves, and I think a really fundamental aspect of what makes us all human. So we want to tear down some of those divides, absolutely. And I think that, you know, no better place to do it than from, I think, within the state legislature.
And I think that bill, which certainly is not going to solve the entire problem, is an important bill to use that money from the document recording fee to chip away.
Right.
That's how so many things work here, is they just chip away.
Right.
And eventually you look around and say, this is not like the way it used to be.
Right.
And it's better.
Yeah.
You used the word commonality a moment ago. And unfortunately, one of the things that many people are sharing in our society today, and more just in the last 6 or 8 weeks than ever before, is mass layoffs.
Right.
You've got House Bill 1313 that addresses mass layoffs and relocations of companies that affect large numbers of people. This is one of your bills that seems to be successful. And by the way, I want to point out that you've prime sponsored 9 bills so far in your legislative career. 4 of them are already in the Rules Committee, which is the next step to a House vote. Looks like at least 2 more are going to be there.
Right.
This is highly unusual. This is 2 out of 3.
Well, it was explained to me very early on in this process by friends in high places and in-house leadership here that you have a moment of opportunity, a window of opportunity as a freshman lawmaker to make an impact. I believe that the voters of my district sent me here to make an impact. And so introducing bills that I thought could do that has been my priority. I'm happy to see that many of them are staying alive, as the Bee Gees would say. And, you know, 1313, it really kind of really resonated with me when Representative Farivar actually came to me with the idea of this bill, because in my studies as a historian, I know that mass layoffs have really cast a shadow over life in Washington state. It started, you know, with the Boeing layoffs in the late 60s and the fact that our local economy was plunged into a deep depression, a localized depression, but a depression nonetheless. And we're still sort of living, our policy-making decisions are still kind of operating in that shadow. The idea that if we pass a progressive revenue package that's going to benefit schools and working families and pay for childcare, a corporation might leave in response. We've seen that kind of used as a cudgel in a lot of ways in our attempts to make Washington a more fair state. So House Bill 1313 is really about giving policymakers the ability to respond to a mass layoff by making corporations that engage in them give us advance notice. Part of the terrible impact that a mass layoff has comes from the shock. It's the suddenness. It's the fact that you suddenly have more people on the unemployment rolls, more people who are relying on social services that they didn't depend on before that layoff. And so policymakers, union representatives who are included in the notification provisions of the bill, as well as workers themselves, all deserve advance notice and the ability to sort of figure out what their next move is going to be. And so that's really what that bill is about.
I want to mention something that we didn't hit on, but this has to do with the fact that you represent the 43rd District. And the way I describe the 43rd District without getting into detail is basically to say everything that people think about when they think about Seattle, most of that is in the 43rd District.
You know, this is you're going to get me in trouble with some of my colleagues in the 36th LD in particular. I think that were representatives Barry or Reed sitting here, they would be very quick to point out that the Space Needle is not in the 43rd. That's in the 36th. The Storm and Kraken play their home games in the 36th. I believe the Seahawks and Mariners play their home games in the 37th. I believe that that's true. So this is contested territory, but I will say we have some of the most dense, actually, we are the most dense legislative district in the state of Washington. That's correct. We have probably the most progressive neighborhood in the entire state in Capitol Hill in my district. When you compare sort of voting trends and how the 43rd LD shows up for social housing for left of center candidates, you're really talking about a Haight-Ashbury, Williamsburg, Hyde Park level of progressive reliability in that district or in that neighborhood. So I'm proud to represent the 43rd, and we call ourselves the Fighting 43rd because I believe that representatives from the seat have historically played a very important role for setting the pace, along with other members of the Seattle delegation, for what progressive policy looks like in the state ledge.
You have another bill that I wanted to talk about today, and that has to do with civilian crisis response teams. That's maybe a term that people don't understand because it's not real common. I've read that bill. I'm pretty impressed, and I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about it.
Well, civilian crisis response is the idea that we have to make advents to our idea of what public safety really is. We have a traditional law enforcement response when somebody calls 911. We've gotten used to the idea of a fire response when there's a house or an establishment that needs protection in that respect. And we have many people in our communities who might need a connection to services, who might need a wellness check, people who are going through a behavioral health episode, to where when you call 911, you want to have somebody show up who is trained in the ways of compassion, meet them to connect them to services, to shelter, to food, to wellness. This is an idea that I believe Washington State has a number of models that we can look to. The CAHOOTS program in Eugene, Oregon, other programs that are similar that have been set up in Albuquerque and other localities. And it is a program that can save lives. We have gotten, unfortunately, used to the spectacle of mostly African-American folks who have lost their lives due to interactions with traditional law enforcement. Those deaths are preventable, and that's what this bill really amounts to. It's the idea that when somebody is in need, we should all have the ability to call 911 to get that person the help that they need. It's about care over criminalization. I was very happy to see it pass through the Technology and Economic Development and Veterans Committee. I've been working in collaboration with Representative Thomas from the 34th LD on moving this bill. Still a little bit of work to do to make sure that it's a tool that big city mayors and council executives in large counties can use to set up these kinds of departments. But we feel confident that this is a bill that is going to move well because it's good policy and it's the right thing to do.
Another kind of crisis that happens all too frequently is sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Sexual assault in schools maybe is a term that people would be jarred by, but the fact is it's depressingly common, mm-hmm. and you have a bill that addresses sexual assault in schools.
Well, House Bill 1817 is the House companion to a bill that Senator Tina Orwell is advancing that really gives young people a voice in their own institutional response to what happens when somebody unfortunately suffers assault in schools. This is a problem that all of our institutions have, where victims who are disproportionately women feel as if they are not listened to, have to relive their trauma in all kinds of unfortunate ways in the pursuit of seeking justice. And it's something that weighs more heavily on young people than it does on other folks who might have more resources and more of an institutional voice. So I'm very, very proud of the work that we did in the Education Committee to get this out of committee. I know that with Senator Tina Orwell's leadership, we're going to be in great hands in getting this idea passed into law. The Legislative Youth Advisory Council has really spearheaded this bill. And it's one of the ways where we see when we're inclusive of younger people and the next generation's perspective, we're all collectively a lot better off and more enlightened as a result of that generational feedback, where we're hearing from them about not only how we can improve life for them and the institution that they have to go through every day, but maybe get more reflective about how we deal with survivors and victims in institutions that adults have all of the power in.
Which is most of the institutions.
Right.
Those are the notes I have about your bills, but I know that we've only talked about a few of them. Pick another bill that you've sponsored that you feel connected to, that you're sponsoring for a reason.
Well, you know, we don't want to get too out ahead of this, but it is very, very clear, it's well known that Washington State is in a budgetary shortfall right now. And, you know, as somebody who is a student of history, I understand that this is not the first time this has happened. Very, very recently with the economic slowdown that resulted from COVID, we came together in the state legislature. I should say the legislature came together. I wasn't here officially, although I was working as a lobbyist with the Statewide Poverty Action Network. The legislature came together and passed a number of revenue proposals and bills that made a very positive difference in people's lives. When there was a similar budgetary slowdown during the Great Recession, a number of unfortunate cuts were made to social services because the legislature at that time did not have the tools that it needed to raise the revenue that was needed to save those programs. And many legislators who have exited the legislature since then have talked about the parallels between that position that they were in 13, 14 years ago and where we are now. We, with new tools to raise revenue that we need to fund the programs that everyday Washingtonians depend on, I think we want to learn from our past. I think we want to use this session as an opportunity to advance revenue proposals that are going to fund the services that everyday Washingtonians depend on. And I'm happy to be working on the Finance Committee with our chair, Representative April Berg, to that end, and hope we can do a lot of good in a very difficult context this year.
You brought up the Finance Committee. What other committee assignments did you get when you got here, and were they the ones you asked for?
They absolutely were. I mean, the Finance Committee I was probably my number one. We talked a little bit about the 43rd Legislative District. I think there's an expectation among people in my district that reps from this seat are going to stand up for progressive revenue options and making sure that we're not balancing our budgets on the backs of working people. And so I was happy to be selected for the Finance Committee. The Labor and Workplace Standards Committee have worked side by side with Representative Barry from the 36th LD. Education is the next committee. And I feel that those were three of the main issues that I had the chance, when my district had the chance to get to know me last year, those were three of the concerns that came up over and over again. And so I'm proud to be on those committees. I honestly feel if I never have the opportunity to serve on any other committees for the extent of the time that I'm here in the legislature, I would be fine with these three committees because I think that they really do touch a lot of some of the most deep-seated values that we have in the 43rd Legislative District.
There's nothing wrong with specializing.
Right.
Sean, I've had you on the microphone for about 20 minutes now. I know that I had permission to have you here until about 3 minutes ago.
Right.
And so before we say goodnight, I want to give you the chance to decide, how do we go out here now? What else?
Oh, well, I think it's about making sure that our Washington shows people what it looks like to have a functional Washington, because the other one is not doing a very good job of that right now. And I think that we have a good chance to define who we are by everything that the other Washington is not right now. We can be a fair Washington. We can be an inclusive one. And that's going to take a lot of work on the part of our lawmakers here. But I know that our caucus and our members are up to the task.
This hasn't been long enough. Representative Sean Scott, I am going to have to let you go now, but I really do want to get you back maybe by the end of this 105-day session. We'll have more to talk about, and I'm looking forward to that already before this one's even over. Sean, it's been a real pleasure to be able to have you here. Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's Representative Sean Scott, and if you're not impressed, you weren't listening. It's that way every time on Capital Ideas, so if you're not a subscriber, you really ought to be. Just visit your favorite podcast aggregator or drop by the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and click on that media button at the top of the page. Choose Capital Ideas from the drop-down menu, and when that page opens, just click on iTunes or SoundCloud or whatever makes you happy. Don't forget, this is your state government, and what happens here matters in your life every single day. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889, the year Myra Bell Shirley, better known as Bandit Queen Belle Starr, met a violent end in the Oklahoma Territory. Thanks for your time and your attention.